Well, it's 4:15. I guess time to start. Thank you all for coming this afternoon. Since we launched the Windows Phone platform back in 2010, one of the biggest and most common requests we've had from developers, like all of you, is to bring native code to the Windows Phone platform. And as you heard in June, and as you've heard over this past week of Build, we've done that in a big way with Windows Phone 8. So my name is Peter Tor. I'm a program manager on the developer platform at Windows Phone. And over the next hour or so, I'll be showing you some of the ways that you can bring your C and C++ code to the Windows Phone platform. And as you can see here, if you were tossing up between this talk and another talk right now, I am repeating this tomorrow morning. So if you would like, if you want to leave now to go to another talk, I won't feel bad at all. So what do we talk about today? I'm really going to talk about three different things in this talk. First is C++ support in Windows Phone 8. Second is when and why you might use that C++ support. And third is an introduction to the Windows Phone runtime. And there'll actually be a lot of demos in this talk, around about half an hour or so. So there'll be less of me talking to slides and more of me in Visual Studio. But I want to start this off by just kind of saying, welcome back to C++. Over the last year or so, yes, we have some fans. over the past decade, there's been a very big focus on managed technologies like C# and VB. But starting with Build last year, we've had what we've called a renaissance of C++. And so I want to show this picture here. How many people recognize this book? Quite a few of you. How many people recognize this book? Quite a few of you. Okay, so the point here is that a lot has changed from the time that first book was written to the time this new edition was built, right? I learned C back on an Amiga 500 way back in the day, and it was old, standard C. But now, with C++ 11 and Visual C++ 2012, we've got really new, modern programming technologies, and you've got this great hardware like the Surface, right? So a lot has changed, and I'll be pointing out some of those changes as well, because if you're like me, you might not have written C or C++ for a long, long time, and some of the new features in C++ might actually surprise you. So what does C++ support in Windows Phone look like? First, it's Visual C++ 2012, right? The real thing. It's the same as Windows 8, same compiler, same libraries, same IDE. And we have a lot of new C++ 11 features in Visual Studio 2012, right? So this isn't some watered down C or C++. This is the real deal, the same thing you get with Windows 8. And now the point of this chart here is not for you to read all the words. It's more kind of a bamboozle the audience with, here's all the cool things that Visual C++ does. But you know, let it be said that there are a lot of features in Visual C++ 2012. So with that kind of brief setup of C++ in Windows Phone, I'm going to drive straight into a demo of what C++ looks like in Visual Studio for Windows Phone, and then a very quick demo of the Direct3D default template. So here we are in Visual Studio 2012 Express for Windows Phone. And the first thing I'm going to do is go up here to the File menu, New Project. And you'll see here under the templates we have Visual C++. And there are a couple of different choices. There's Windows Phone Direct3D with XAML app. And this is actually a combination of both C++ and C# or VB. We have a Windows Phone Direct3D native-only app, and that is pure C++. There's no managed code at all. We have Windows Phone runtime component, and we'll talk a bit about Windows Phone runtime later on today. And then we have your standard dynamic link library and static link library. So everything that you would be used to having written C++ in Windows in the past is applicable to the phone. So I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to create this Direct3D native-only application and click OK. And I'm going to do a very quick walkthrough. Sam George has a talk on native game development in Windows Phone 8. He goes into a lot more detail. So this will just be a very quick look at a couple of the features just to show you that it is real C++. I'm going to kick off a build in the background. But first of all, you can see, obviously, that this is C++. We're using namespaces. We have all sorts of wonderful C++ code here. You don't need to read it, just that this is real C++. If we look over here in the Solution Explorer, you'll see we have HLSL, so high-level shader language files. So we're doing real Direct3D with real high-level shaders. If I go over here to the app manifest and open this with the text editor, you'll see here that you're actually building an, actually building an executable. So again, it's not some hosted C++ thingy. It's not some weird thing like we own some of the code, you own some of the code. You are building an honest-to-goodness executable when you're writing a native code app in Windows Phone. And then the last thing I'll show you, just to kind of prove that this is real, and if there's any C-sharp developers in the audience, you should close your eyes now, because this will scare you. If I go to the properties dialog, and I go here, C++, all these prop options, look at that command line. Right? It's a command line only your mother could love. Right? So this really is real C++, right? We're not kidding. So I'm just going to go ahead, and I'm going to run this, just to show you it running on the phone. And this is just the standard default spinning cube demo. So nothing particularly flashy here, but just this is real C++. It's real Direct3D. It's the real thing. And like I said, Sam George has a talk that goes into a lot of detail about this. So let's quit out of that. So that's just kind of orienting you in Visual Studio, right? It's just what you expect it to be. So now if we go back to the slides here, we've had a quick look at Visual Studio, Visual C++ is the real thing in Windows Phone, but when and why would you use C++? Because it's not always applicable. And the good news about using C++ in Windows Phone is that all apps can use native code. Not just pure native, not just XAML and native, but all of them. Directory games are native, XAML apps can be mixed. But the thing is that not all apps need to use C++ all the time. If you are a C-sharp developer or a VB developer, and you have an existing application, you have an existing code base, you love what you do, it performs well, it has the features you want, there's no need for you to go out and suddenly throw that away and write C++, or take your code and replace it with C++. Right? So we love C++, we want you to use it where it makes sense, but we're not trying to push it onto anybody. So nobody should get the impression that we're trying to push C++ to people that don't actually want to use it. So I've said you don't always need to use it, but what do we think are the top three use cases for C++? Who thinks performance is the number one reason we use C++? Okay, there's quite a few hands up. Oh, you're wrong. from the way we define it. You're not wrong. From the way we define it, that's wrong. Who thinks portability is the number one reason we have C++ in Windows Phone? More people. Who thinks the next thing I'm going to put up is the number one reason we do it? You already chose. No, it doesn't, actually. Actually, portability is the main reason. Reusability is another great goal that we have, but portability really is the number one reason we've done this in Windows Phone 8. And again, I can't stress it enough, you don't have to use C++ to get a great, well-performing application, but it's there if you have portable code you want to use, code you want to reuse, or you really, really do need that raw performance. So now I'm going to have a go straight to another demo of using legacy code in Windows Phone 8 apps. And let me switch over here. And I'm going to start off not with Visual Studio 2012, but Developer Studio from 1994. How many people remember this? A few people. OK. And look at this. I've even got a start button down here. You remember that thing? So this is an example of a very, very simple console app. And it's basically pretending to be a stock analyzing application. And it runs in a loop, and it calls this function called getStockTip, which I've defined in a library. So I'm going to go ahead and run it. And this is a nice console app from 1994. So it prints out some text, and I can type in MSFT. It'll pretend to analyze MSFT, and it should come back and tell me to buy it. OK, what sort of Microsoft stuff? That's good. And of course, I can type in something else like Apple. And it will come back, and it will tell me to hold. If I'm like, yes, it'll say hold Apple stock. Right. So very, very basic 1994-style console API. Let's quit that. And what it's doing is it's calling this incredibly complicated C++ code. And right now, it's hard-coded to burn the CPU for a little bit. Then it just checks if I MSFT or am I Apple. And so the point here is not to dazzle you with the power of C++ and all the cool features. We'll do that in a little bit. The point here is really just to get across that this was ancient code written years and years and years ago, and we don't really want to touch it. Right. So how do we bring that into the new world? So let's switch across to our modern application. And you can see here's exactly the same code. Our syntax highlighting has gotten better. We have more colors now. And if I go ahead and run this version of it, you'll see I have a nice modern application. There's MSFT in there again. I can click Get Recommendation. And if we're lucky, you should be able to hear it. She should speak to you, actually, if the speaker is on.
Recommendation for Microsoft is by.
Can you hear that? OK, anyway, she's speaking to us. And of course, thank you. And of course, because this is a modern app, I might want to use speech as well. So I can click here. Apple.
Heard you say Apple.
So it puts in Apple. I can get recommendation. It's going to go off, spin around a little bit.
Recommendation for Apple is hold.
Right. So it's running the same code, but in a much cooler way. Now, if I type in something like Nokia.
Heard you say Nokia.
And then I get the recommendation. Obviously, we don't have Nokia programmed in, so it's going to tell me it doesn't know what
to do. Recommendation for Nokia is unknown.
OK. So the code that I have from 1994 doesn't understand Nokia. But I can go back to, you know, the old crusty guys sitting in the lab and say, can you please update your ancient code base to support Nokia? So if I go back here into my old ancient time warp, and I'll just go ahead and I'll copy this code here from Microsoft, and we'll say, well, if you ask for Nokia, you should buy that too. So I'm going to go ahead and build that. And the crusty old guys from 1994 are going to test it, run it in their console app, and OK. Let's wait. And yes, now it wants us to buy Nokia. OK. And if we switch back to the present time, you'll see I was actually using exactly the same source code, right? So exactly the same source code running on a console app in Visual Studio 4.2 and in a modern Windows Phone 8 app in 2012. And so that's the first look at sharing code, legacy code in Windows Phone 8. Now, of course, I didn't show you the magic about how I get from XAML to native C. We'll do that in the next demo. But this is just showing you it is the same code running in both places. OK. So now I showed you the native code. Now we need to talk about the magic, about how that native code gets called by XAML. And you've probably heard a lot since build last year and at build this year about the Windows runtime, or as we have on the phone, the Windows, quote, phone runtime. Really, I'll probably use the term Windows runtime interchangeably. The Windows phone runtime is just the flavor of it that happens to run on the phone, but it's essentially the same thing. So what is the Windows phone runtime? It's really a set of two things. It's a set of infrastructure, and it's a set of APIs. Now, on the infrastructure side of things, you have things like the core plumbing of the platform for type activation and memory management and so on. You have shared types, things like strings and objects and enumerators and so on. And then you also have standard programming model, right, around objects and methods and exceptions and events and so on. And on the API side of things, you have Windows Phone features that we expose through APIs. We have your own libraries and libraries that you license or write exposed in APIs. And we have these APIs projected for both C++ and managed languages. And of course, on desktop Windows, they project into JavaScript as well. But in Windows Phone 8, we don't have JavaScript. So it's just for C++ and C# and VB. So when do you use the Windows runtime? Well, three places, really. First is calling APIs, right? Phone APIs or your own APIs. You use Windows runtime for that. The second is if you want to do native and managed interop. It's the only supported interop mechanism on the phone. And the third is that if you're writing a direct 3D game, it's bootstrapped using a WinRT application model. But because these APIs are projected into your application in a very natural way, these things just fade off into the background, right? You don't know that you're using a Windows runtime API versus a .NET API or versus just a C++ class. Right? They truly do just look to you like a natural part of the language that you're using. So let's go back to that same finance app. And now we'll look at how we call WinRT APIs from C#. We'll look at how we create that WinRT component in C++ and call it from C#. And then we'll look at how we can solve some of the performance problems in that app using the magic of async. So here we are back in that finance app. And let's go full screen. And here we are in the microphone clicked event handler. So I clicked the microphone, I could speak. Now, if you look at this code here, who can tell me where the WinRT bit is? No one? Right. Yes, the speech recognizer UI is actually a WinRT type. But you wouldn't know that looking at it, right? It's perfectly natural to a C-sharp developer. I'm calling methods, I'm passing in strings and a dictionary, and I'm setting properties, and I'm using the await keyword to get asynchronous calls back. It just looks like a managed API, right? So calling WinRT APIs from managed code, completely natural. You'd never know you were even doing it. Let's look at calling a custom WinRT API that I'm going to show you how to write in just a second. When I click that recommendation button, this is the code I run. Again, where's the WinRT? Right? You can't see it. That stock analysis is actually a C++ component that we're going to write. And it, again, looks just like a managed object. You can't tell this isn't just normal managed code you're calling. I'm going to call it to get a recommendation, which is going to go run that legacy C code. I'm going to put the result into a text box, and then I'm going to use yet another WinRT API, this time the speech synthesis API, to speak the text out. All right. So completely natural, you have no idea that you're not using .NET code. So then how do I go ahead and write that stock analysis C++ WinRT component? Well, let's look at the header first. I'll take a drink, sorry. So here we have a standard C++ header file. Some things might be new if you were like me and you haven't touched C++ in about 10 years. Namespaces are in C++ now. There's this thing called unique pointer, which you can use for memory management, which we'll touch on in a little bit. This is an internal function I'll use as a helper, and we'll look at that later on. I can have properly scoped enums now. So I have an enum class with strongly typed scoped enum values that don't pollute the global namespace. And here is just a normal C++ class. And the thing that makes it a WinRT class is it has this ref keyword. Right? I put ref in front of it, and that tells the compiler, hey, this is a WinRT class. It has some particular rules it needs to follow, but then it will be projected out into different languages. It also has to be sealed for technical reasons, but the main part is that the ref bit is the bit that triggers this is a WinRT component. If I didn't put ref there, it would just be a private implementation detail to my particular library. And of course, I have one function called stock recommendation, get recommendation, string hat stock symbol. And now, if anyone here is familiar with managed C++, you might be thinking to yourself, that Peter guy is lying to me. This is not C++. This is managed C++. It's the CLR under the covers. No, it is real C++. It is real native code. What they've done is they've just reused some of the syntax from managed C++ in the new C++ CX. So a hat is like a star, meaning a pointer, but it's a ref-counted pointer that's to a WinRT object. Right? So this is not managed C++. So this is my class declaration. Let's go ahead and look at how it's implemented. First of all, here's my get recommendation API. I'm going to call my platform string to char array helper. We'll get to that in a little bit. This is really just because WinRT strings are Unicode, and my crusty old code from 1994 uses old char star, and I need to convert between the two. And I'm using one of these new C++ features called auto. And auto, right, rather than putting a type in here, I'm using auto. And auto is like var in C#. It does not mean that this is a typeless variable or a late bound variable. Right? This absolutely has a type, and the compiler will enforce it, and it is early bound and all that good stuff. What it means is I don't have to bother typing that long sequence of characters in to name the type, because the compiler can figure it out. And if I hover my mouse here, you'll see that ANSI string is actually a std unique pointer char, std default delete char ANSI string. Right? I don't want to type that many angle brackets and colons, so I just type auto. Right? So it's a great time-saving feature. So this gets me my good old char star ANSI string. I call getStockTip, and this is the exact same code that you saw before, running both in 1994 and in 2012. And then I cast the result back to my new strongly typed enum to send it back to the caller. So that's all you need to do to interop between a crusty old native API and a brand new WinRT API. But I want to spend a little bit of time on this platform string to char array function, because it actually also shows quite a few features of both Windows runtime and some new C++ stuff. So the first thing you'll see is that this function takes a string hat, meaning it takes a WinRT type, but it returns a unique pointer of char, which is a C++ type. It is not a WinRT type. So the first thing is you can mix the two things, right? And the way that we recommend you build your code is that you keep your native code pure C, C++, right, using STL and all that good stuff, and then you write a wrapper using the WinRT types. But you don't use the WinRT types in your implementation, because there is some overhead with dealing with WinRT types, because they're ref counted and they do a lot of bounds checking and stuff like that. So we absolutely support mixing both WinRT types and native types in the same function, but not if it's part of that public class declaration of my ref class. Right? This is an internal function. So again, I'm using this auto keyword because I didn't want to type const whichar t star. So I'm just getting the data out of this Unicode string. And again, I said WinRT is just like using C++, right? I use the arrow dereferencing member operator, just like it was a C++ class. I then get the buffer size out of the string, and I used int here because int has 3 characters and auto has 4. Then I go ahead and I new up an old style buffer, right? And remember that I'm newing up a buffer here. We'll come back to that in a second. So I new up a buffer big enough to fill my string. And then I call wide chart and multibyte. And anyone that's done Windows programming has probably come across this one or its counterpart, multibyte to wide char. And this is the Win32 API that converts between Unicode and non-Unicode strings. Right? And this is showing that you can call Win32 APIs in your code as well. Right? Not all of them, right? There's a subset of APIs that are callable from a Windows 8 store app, and we have a subset of those you can call from a Windows phone app. But there are a lot of Win32 APIs you can call, like this particular one. And then finally, I return this in my std unique pointer. And so I said, remember, I newed up that buffer, right, that char array, but I never deleted it here. And if you, again, haven't used C++ for a while and you wrote C back in high school or whatever, you might think I've got a memory leak because I didn't delete that buffer. Well, the good thing about modern C++ is we have these things like unique pointer and its friend shared pointer, which actually do memory management for you. Right? So I allocate this buffer in platform string to char array, and I tuck it inside this unique pointer. The unique pointer returns this value to get recommendation, passing ownership of that buffer to ANSI string. And then when I fall off the end of this function, right, my local variable gets destroyed, and it knows it was holding onto a buffer, so it just deletes it for me. Right? So a lot of your memory management hassles of the past are gone away in modern C++. Right, so that is how we implement a simple WinRT class using C++. But there's a problem with this code, and I said we'd talk a little bit about async. So if I run it, I want you to notice what happens. When I click on the Get Recommendation button, doesn't always work, but it tends to stay red.
Recommendation for Microsoft is by.
She'll keep interrupting me. See how it's staying red?
Recommendation for Microsoft is by.
It stayed red because that old code, that crusty old code from 1994, is blocking the UI thread. Right? It's a bunch of synchronous code. It's pretending to do a lot of complex processing. And so the UI can't update. And you've probably all heard about fast and fluid and how great that is. And we want our app to be fast and fluid as well. And what we could do is we could go back to the people that own this code base and say, please make it multi-threaded. You know, please make it perform nicely. But they don't want to touch that, right? This is critical, business-critical code that's been running for decades. They're not going to go ahead and just retool the whole thing for multi-threaded access. And we could say, well, it's the responsibility of the UI developer to call this on a background thread so they don't block the UI. But that's not the right way to do it either, because we have these cool new features like the await keyword and async methods in .NET these days. So it's not the right answer to say that the UI developer should fix this problem too. So what we're going to do is in our WinRT component, we're going to make this stock recommendation automatically support await and automatically be fast and fluid. And it's really, really easy. So let's quit this and first go back to our header file. I'm going to convert that synchronous blocking slow API into a fast and fluid asynchronous modern API. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take the existing declaration right there. I'm just going to paste it in. And I'm going to add async at the end, because if you've looked at any of the WinRT APIs, they all have async at the end. Now, it's not quite that easy. That doesn't do the job for me. I have to do a bit more work. But that's the first step. And it helps if I spell it right. The next thing I'm going to do is instead of returning a stock recommendation, I'm going to return an iasync operation of type stock recommendation and put the hat on the end because this is a WinRT type. And this is the built-in WinRT interface that lets the await keyword work in C# so that the compiler can build the asynchronous callbacks for you. So now I've got my new declaration. I'm going to copy that, go back to my implementation, paste it in, put in my class scope, and create my function body. Now, I know that eventually I want to reuse the code I've got here, this get recommendation code. So I'm going to eventually return that, the stock symbol. But that would just call the synchronous one. But I can make it asynchronous with essentially calling one method and doing a little bit of lambda magic. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to wrap this in a library call called concurrency create async. And that is the magic that takes a normal piece of C++ code, a normal lambda, runs it on a thread pool thread and deals with all the implementation of that interface to enable the awaiting to happen. Now, obviously, I can't just put a statement like that inside the call to a function, and the compiler's telling me that's an error. So I'm going to convert it into a lambda. Now, anyone that does C# probably knows what a lambda is. It's basically an anonymous method that can close over its enclosing scope. And modern C++ has lambdas, too, and they're used all over the place, especially in WinRT programming. And the way that you introduce a lambda in C++ is great. You basically, all you have to remember is, I have to use every bracket key on the keyboard. Right. So here we go. I go square brackets. I go parentheses. And then I go curly braces. Right. Square brackets, parentheses, curly braces. That's how you build a lambda in Visual C++. Right. So clearly, the braces are my function body. So let's go ahead and move my return into there. The parentheses are the argument list. And in this case, we have no argument, so that can remain empty. And the square brackets, which introduce the lambda, is where I can tell C++ what variables I want to capture from the enclosing scope. Now, if you've done C#, C# figures that out for you, and it automatically takes care of this. But because in C++, we can copy things by value or by reference, it doesn't really know what we want. In this case, we want by reference. So I'm going to stick an equal sign in here. And now will my compiler errors disappear. Right. So now this can create async. It's going to create a thread, pull thread, call this lambda on it, and magic is going to happen. And now what I want to do is, because I have my async version of this, I'm actually going to take the old synchronous version, and I'm going to hide it from the public, because I don't want anybody ever calling this. But I still have this version around if I need it in my own code. And now, of course, if I build, I'd get a compiler error, because that method doesn't exist anymore. But I fix that by going over to the main page and saying I'm going to await the async version. So let's build that and run it. And now we should see that when I click that button, it doesn't stay red, right? Because now we're running this on a different thread. Let's run that. So now if I say get recommendation, I can actually still interact with the device while it's doing that.
Recommendation for Microsoft is by.
Right. So it did all that processing on a background thread. I did not touch my legacy code. I did not touch the UI code other than putting that await keyword in. I did all the magic inside WinRT. And I've shown you how to look, I've shown you how to call WinRT APIs from C Sharp and how to implement them in C++. We'll look at how to use them in C++ in one of the future demos. Okay, so now let's look a little bit at writing portable components. Because as we said, portability is really the number one reason we brought C++ to Windows Phone. So if you're sharing code across platforms, there's basically two buckets of things you can fall into. There's sharing with iOS and Android, and here, of course, you can use the standard C libraries, you can use open source libraries, you can use middleware like Unity, et cetera, for sharing between Windows Phone and other platforms. And of course, if you're writing Windows 8 apps, you can use all of that, plus you can use the subset of the Windows runtime that's supported on the phone, and you can use the subset of the Win32 and COM APIs that are supported on the phone. And Andrew Byrne has a talk, it actually just finished, but you'll be able to find it online, about sharing code. He talks a lot more about sharing managed code across Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, but you, if you want to look at this 343 online, they make Halo. If you want to look at 343 online, you can learn a lot more about sharing code for managed apps. So let's get back into a demo again. And I'm going to show you SQLite. Right? Everyone's heard of SQLite, big open source library. Right? So the stock example I showed you was toy code, but this is real code. So let's switch across. Now, the first thing I want to show you is doesn't matter what code I have up here, it's just code right now. But you'll see that I'm trying to call a SQLite3 method, and I'm getting a compiler error because SQLite3 isn't actually in my project right now. But I want to show you how easy it is to get SQLite into your Windows Phone projects. So I go up to the Tools menu, Extensions and Updates, and I type in up here SQLite. Actually, let's go online. Type in SQLite. And my networking is not working. Of course, it's not working. But if I had a networking connection, you would see SQLite for Windows Phone pop up there. And luckily, I installed it already. So I don't have to worry about the network. But that's all you do. You open the extensions, you type in SQLite, it's there, you click Install, bang. You've now got SQLite on your machine. And adding it to a project is really, really easy. So I'm going to go ahead into my Solution Explorer. I'm going to right-click on my WinRT project, References, Add New Reference. And there, up here, you see SQLite for Windows Phone is one of the Windows Phone extensions. So I click here, click OK, and Build, and my compiler error goes away. Right? So that's how easy it is to download SQLite into Visual Studio for Windows Phone 8, and then to add a reference to it and get that into your project. So I'm going to go ahead and run this now. Oh, actually, I have a compiler error. I'm going to go ahead and run this right now, and you will see that it's basically a very simple application that is pretending to be a menu for a restaurant. Any second now. Okay, so here we are. It's a simple menu app. It's getting some data from a SQLite database, and it's putting it in a list. And I can scroll through here, scrolling through. And I see I actually have a problem here. Right? Apple Pie doesn't have an image in my database. It's in my application. And that's not a very good experience to have. So what I'm going to do is, because we're using real SQLite now, you can use the existing tools and tool chains that you have already for dealing with SQLite databases and just use them on the phone as well. And so for this particular example, I'm going to use a command line tool you can get from SQLite.org, which basically just has a command line interface to running commands against a table. All right. So if I type in here, right, Apple Pie was the one that was broken, so I type in select star from menu items where item name like Apple. Okay, so here's the row in the database for Apple. It looks okay to me, but something was wrong. So what does one of the other ones look like, right? Another menu item is a chocolate shake. So let's do the same thing, where the name is like chocolate. And we'll see that actually the last column in the database is supposed to be a file name for a JPEG to load. And I happen to know that the JPEG for Apple Pie is 19. So now I can just say update menu items, set item picture equal 19.jpg. Okay, let's go ahead and exit to release the database. Go back into Visual Studio, Control F5, run the app again. It'll take the database that I was just been operating on, deploy it to the phone. Oh, whoops, I forgot the where. Whoops. That's the joy of doing live SQL demos. I forgot the where clause. But anyway, if I put the where clause in, you would have seen Apple Pie only in the Apple Pie section. And another thing I want to show you as well, just that this is, you know, this is real C++, and real SQLite if you're not yet convinced. I'm going to go ahead and look in my Solution Explorer at this prepare statement async function. So I'm going to run into the debugger now. And we will see that I'm actually requesting real SQL statements, right? Select star from menu items. It's a bit hard to see, I'm afraid. Right. So I'm executing normal SQL statements from my app, F5. And then this doesn't look like a burger anymore. This now looks like an apple pie. So let's just go ahead and delete all this. Apple pie again. Whoops. And let's make it $6. Go ahead, click save. And now here we are again, and my command, if you can see it, is, again, standard SQL statement, update menu items, blah, blah, blah. I'm using named parameters, right? No SQL injection bugs here, right? This is real SQLite running on the phone. It's all good. So the one thing I said I'd show you as well is how to use async APIs within C++. So let's take a quick look at that now. Let's zoom back out again. And you'll see here in my open database call, this is the call I'm making in order to open the database. And it's asynchronous because it's going to hit the disk and it might take some time and we want it to be fast and fluid. So first of all, I'm going to do just a little bit of checking to make sure I'm not opening the database twice. That's pretty standard stuff. Again, Win32 API here, throwing exceptions, WinRT exceptions that can be caught from managed code, so the exceptions go across boundaries. And then down here is the async stuff. And we looked at create async earlier when we were making that stock code go become awaitable. And because this is an iasync action, I'm doing the same thing. I'm returning a create async. I'm capturing the this pointer so that I can refer to this inside my lambda. And then the body of that lambda method is actually returning a create task. And so create async is what lets you take C++ lambdas and expose them out to WinRT as awaitable asynchronous things. Create task is kind of the opposite. It lets you take iasync action and iasync operation WinRT methods and convert them into tasks that C++ can use naturally. Right. So I call create task and I pass in storage file, get file from application URI async with the database name. Right. So that's going to call get file from application URI async, which is going to return me one of these iasync actions. And then create task is going to do its magic. And then I call dot then on this, right? And this is very similar to the JavaScript way of doing await. Not the same as C#, where you use the await keyword, but essentially it's the same thing. It'll wait for a get file from application URI async to complete. Then it will invoke my next lambda. Again, I'm closing over the this pointer so that I can access the object. This time I do take a parameter, which is the storage file that came back from get file async. And here, again, I'm just using the auto keyword. I'm calling a real SQLite 3 API, getting back the return code, and doing the right stuff with it. Right. So this is how you can take WinRT APIs that are asynchronous and use them in C++. So it is the syntax is a little bit strange with the create task and the then, but that's not really a WinRT thing. That's more of an asynchronous thing, right? Because as you've seen, the objects themselves look just like normal types. Use the arrow dereferencing member operator to get to them, and you treat them just like normal C++ types, except you don't delete them because they're ref counted. Okay. So with that, I'm going to start wrapping up. We've looked at a couple of things today. So key takeaways from this, firstly, is that all Windows Phone apps can use C++. DirectX apps, XAML apps, they can all use C++ and C as well. And the main reason we did this is to enable portability and code reuse. Right? You can use it for performance, but it's predominantly for code reuse and portability. And lastly, Windows Runtime is the key to unlocking APIs in Windows Phone, both platform APIs like speech and a lot of the other ones that I didn't show you today, and unlocking your own APIs that you can write using your own libraries. So that kind of brings the talk to an end. We're actually running a little bit early, so I hope there's a bunch of questions. Please fill out an evaluation form. They do help us to improve these talks and get better every year. And these are some of the related sessions if you're interested. Native game development with Sam George. Unfortunately, that's going on right now, but you'll be able to see that live. He goes deep into the DirectX game and how you can do a pure native D3D game. Tim Laverty does a talk on networking, including sockets, NFC, Bluetooth, etc., which is also important for a lot of native scenarios. And as I mentioned, Andrew Byrne has a talk for more about managed code sharing and portability across Windows and Windows Phone. And then Eric Bennett does a talk about photo and lens apps. Imaging and photography is one of the areas where we think that people will use a lot of XAML code for the UI, plus native code for the computation of lens filters and so on. And then another great talk, which is not specific to the phone, but is a great talk about some of the new things in C++, is the Power of C++ Project Austin by Ale Contenti. He's Italian, I think. So with that, I can take questions now. Thank you. So the question was, have we found any libraries that we've had problems bringing over to the phone?
Yeah.
Not really if they were also brought over to desktop Windows. So if you look at SQLite, for example, they run across a broad set of platforms, and they already had a Win32 version, but now they have a specific WinRT version, which only uses the APIs that are allowed inside the modern subset. Right? But once they did that to get it working on Windows 8, we brought it over to the phone. So you'll find other examples where they might be calling a Win32 API that is disallowed in the Windows Store, in the Windows Phone Store. But if you replace that with an allowed API or with a WinRT API, it should work across both phone and desktop. Yeah. Basically, the point being that, yes, the fewer platform dependencies a library has, the easier it is to port, yeah. But you know, things like SQLite are built explicitly with an abstraction layer, right? So they have their own way of doing I/O and so on, and each platform provides the functionality for doing disk I/O and stuff like that. So libraries that are explicitly built to be portable or libraries that are pure C++, don't use any platform APIs, will port very, very well. So the question is PPL supported on Windows Phone 8? Some of it is, but most of it is not, I don't believe. I don't know the specifics, but it is on the documentation. Oh, no, I used iasync result because that's what projects out to WinRT, right? So if you're writing a WinRT component, you must use iasync operation. You must use string hat, right? You must use iVectorView. But inside your own code, right, like I say, you want a veneer of WinRT types, but in your own code, you would use tasks, and you would use wstring, and you would use, you know, std::vector and all those native types. But the projected layer must be of this protect. The particular WinRT types. Did you want to have another one? Okay. In the back. The question was, is C++ AMP supported in Windows Phone? I don't know. The documentation tells you the specifics of which what is and what isn't supported. Unfortunately, I don't know that one. So the question was, in the Windows Store, do we have an estimate how many C++ apps versus HTML JavaScript apps? No, we have no such, not that I know of, we have no such estimate. I do know that a lot of the apps are both, so they'll have an HTML and JavaScript UI, but then the core, right, they'll be reusing these native libraries, whether it's SQLite or, you know, libgzip or libpng or something else like that. So they're leveraging their existing native code assets, even if the UI happens to be JavaScript and C++, HTML. In the back?
Are there any directions for porting legacy code that depends on libraries, like say MFC or ATL?
The question is there any recommendation for porting legacy libraries like MFC or ATL? MFC, not so much, because that's pretty tightly baked into, you know, the Win32 world. But ATL in particular, what I've been showing you is the C++ CX, right, the hat syntax and the ref new and all that kind of stuff. There's another much lower level thing called WRL, the Windows Runtime Library, which is the ATL version of what I've been showing you. And that was explicitly designed so that if you have existing COM code and existing ATL code, you can port it over to the Windows Runtime style of doing things. There is work involved, but yes, if you love dealing with raw COM pointers and you love iUnknown and you love query interface and all that kind of stuff, we've got the library for you. Anything else? No? Okay, thank you, everyone.